You are listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprungs disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprungs with a positive message throughout. And welcome back to episode 3 of Tom's Hirschsprungs podcast. This is the second of a two-part episode featuring the excellent Kyla Thompson again. Thank you very much for joining me once again. We ended the last episode, for those who haven't heard, talking about the miraculous medical miracle that that is Bella Thompson, your daughter. And we led off, and we finished the last episode talking very, very briefly about August 2023, when you were waiting for a new transplant for a new bowel for Bella. What I want to get the idea of is, what was waiting for the call like? And then when you got the call, and then sort of the afterbirth of that as well. So obviously you're waiting for the call, put on the transplant list in 2020, am I right in saying that?
Yes.
And then so you're waiting for the call for around 3 years or so. How did that feel for you?
I still remember all the dates. It was like exactly 3 years from the time she got listed to the time that she received it. A very difficult 3 years of waiting for that call. In December of 2022, we actually did get the first call that didn't work out. The waiting was, it was different waves of emotions, big emotions. I remember when we went to Toronto SickKids Hospital and they assessed Bella for a bowel transplant. And at that time, she had been rejected by Edmonton, the only other place in Canada that does a bowel transplant for kids. And they rejected her because, so she's in bowel failure. She's surviving off of IV fluids. And the doctors are telling me, okay, she has no more IV access. If she doesn't get a bowel transplant with failing bowels happening, she will not survive the next 5 to 10 years. And so we reached out to Edmonton, the Stollery Children's, and they had said no. And that was really hard because they had said no because they just had not had experience with giving a solid organ transplant to a child who's already had a bone marrow transplant. That was their worry. They were really worried about how this would affect her immune system, and they weren't confident. And so that was really a big hit, because I'm thinking, okay, we know what her life-saving surgery is, and now it's been rejected by the first place we reach out to. But thankfully, within a week's time, our specialist reached out to Toronto SickKids, and they accepted her right away. They were so confident, and that helped me so much, because I was just coming, oh my gosh, nobody's going to save my child with this surgery. What are we going to do? And SickKids is like, nope, we're going to do it. It's going to be great. And I was like, oh, phew. So now we're traveling across the country to get her seen by these specialists in Toronto. And they did an assessment of her that took about 2 weeks. And then they listed her and said, okay, we are confident we can do this. It's going to be difficult. Basically, just like the conversation I had leading up to her bone marrow transplant, they had explained, we will bring your child so close to death for a chance at saving their life. And so I was going through all of that again. I was like, oh my goodness. Okay. So it was like another mountain that was really daunting. But SickKids made it amazing, and they made it as hard as the 3 years were to wait, they helped in amazing ways. So the wait was mostly difficult because her little body had no vascular access. She, because of Hirschsprung's, she's 9 at this point, and she, because her bowels were not working, she was surviving off of TPN, surviving off IV fluids. And at that point, she had had 13 different central lines removed and put in for various reasons. There was a couple times we took them out because we thought she didn't need it anymore. And then that ended up scarring that vessel. We didn't know, right? There was a couple that did get infected around bone marrow transplant time. So her whole upper vascular access was just scarred. And they were like, okay, well, she has one access point left. And that was actually a collateral that had developed because her SVC is completely scarred. So not only did she have a bone marrow transplant, but now she had SVC syndrome. And they're like, okay, the odds are really stacking up against her for this bowel transplant to be successful, but we're still going to try. So SickKids still gave us that confidence, like, this transplant will save her life. We will get it done. And so the only hard part of the wait was they had told me it. If we lose this last collateral line, then there is no chance at her getting this transplant. So the wait was so hard because it was daily, this central line, not even like basically like a glorified PICC IV line in her arm that we were relying on. So it was 24 hours of me accessing this line every 24 hours, making sure it was working. And the amount of mental exhaustion that had on me every day for 3 years, I think it aged me. Like, I think mentally I'm like 105 right now because of that stress every day. So that made it the hardest part, because knowing like any time I check that line and it doesn't work, her bowel transplant is out the window. And so that was really the most difficult part of the wait.
That's an awful lot of responsibility, isn't it, on your
Yeah.
shoulders, and knowing that, right, if this, if this doesn't work, if I don't do this, if I don't check every 24 hours, then, that's on me. And yeah, that's, but I also want to get to when, so when you, the great news, when you get the call, so you've been waiting for best part of 3 years, or nearly
Yeah.
3 years to the day, you said. Waiting for that call. What was it relief? Was it excitement? Was it a mixture of lots of things? The feelings when you finally get that call.
Yeah, it was definitely relief and excitement. No nerves. And I think that's because of the 2.5 years prior, plus the first call that didn't work out. So like when Bella was first listed, we were so like we were like Bella knew this. She was never nervous. I mean, this was like surgery number 30 for her. So she doesn't stress about surgeries. She was very excited because it was daily pain. Bowels, she knew they were failing. She knew they were causing her daily pain. She wanted this transplant so bad. And the first year, I remember them telling me, like, okay, have one bag packed and ready to go. The emergency flight is going to pick you up. You have room for one bag. So I remember having that bag by our front door for the first like year. And after the first year, I got really discouraged and I unpacked that bag and I said, whatever, when the call comes, I'm just going to throw whatever I need in a bag and we're going to go. And then the second year went by and I was like, things got much more stressful with her line access and her pain. And I was really just in survival mode, thinking, okay, we just need this call to come, but I'm just like keeping my head above water until it happens. And the first call that came, it was December, it was freezing cold, it was difficult flight, took, over 15 hours to get in this tiny little ambulance plane in Saskatchewan to Toronto. We get there. They try to prep her and they're like, no, we're going to wait. And then, no, we're going to wait. And then the next morning, they're like, they tell us they can't do it. And for whatever reason, it had to do with the donor at that time, their organs just weren't viable. And so they sent us home within 24 hours of just being there. And that was, oh, that was so hard. That was so hard. We after that wait, and then we're like, okay, this is going to be a relief, and then gone. So that was December 18th, 2022. And then we jump ahead to August 2023, and we get the call, and it was warm. Bella was sitting down having lunch. My little boy was playing in the living room. Lyle was at work. And at that point, when we got the call, I was just expecting my nurse to be like, okay, blood work on Tuesday. You're going to do this. Like, I didn't expect it. I was just like, not giving up, but I was like, I can't hold on to this feeling anymore. It's just going to happen when it happens. I need to focus on keeping my kid alive. That's all I can do. So it took me by surprise when she was like, we have a bowel for Bella. And I was like, what? And Bella was eating lunch and she dropped her fork and she's like, did we get the call? And I'm like, yeah. And she's like, she just jumped up. Yes. She's like, yes, call dad, call dad. And she was just like so pumped.
Oh, that's
Just like
brilliant.
cheering at the table. And I'm like, ah. So then she and me having, gone through the last experience of just like, I was like cautiously excited. But everything was so smooth, even to the point where it's like they told us before, like, there's only a room for one parent on the plane. So it's like my husband, like, he and my son, they would have had to wait, possibly not making it there before her actual surgery. And we get to the airport and they're like, nope, we've approved it. Dad can come too. My son Waylon stayed with grandma and grandpa. Our flight was awesome. We landed. Things went so smooth. And even through surgery, both of her surgeons told me afterward they have never seen a bowel transplant, like a solid organ transplant, go that smooth. They told me before, as they were prepping for this surgery, they're like, it could be 10 to 20 hours. We will come out halfway through. They're like, don't be alarmed. If we're taking a break, this could be a 20-hour surgery. It's all planned. We'll come and update you. Don't be worried if you don't hear from us for the first 4 hours. So we're like, okay. We get in there within the first hour, the surgeon calls. And I'm like, why? And he's like, the first hour, he's like, everything's great. He's like, don't worry. I'm just going to get a coffee. I don't want you to see me at Starbucks and get scared because I'm not in the surgery. And I was like, are you kidding me right now? And he's like, it's going that well. He's like, it's amazing. She's doing great. And then on top of that, she was done and in the ICU in 8 hours.
Wow.
So like 2 hours shorter than how these transplants typically go. They said it was a perfect match for her size and everything. And from there, she had a great recovery as well.
Fantastic. No, I something that really struck me with that story that I don't think people would understand unless they had a connection with Hirschsprung's was cheering over a new bowel. I think that's absolutely brilliant. I think that people wouldn't just wouldn't understand that if they hadn't had Hirschsprung's or knew anything about the Hirschsprung's. And I think that's absolutely fantastic. And the Starbucks also makes me laugh that he felt he'd see you then think, where shouldn't you be operating on my daughter?
It was. Yeah. Wait. Yeah.
But that's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
And such a heartwarming story as well, which again is why I invited you on and really glad that you accepted, because this is such a story of somebody who's so happy, so full of life, having been through, 8 times as many things as most people will ever go through, but it's just
Yeah.
so happy. And on that point, so you had surgery, all goes well. Then you had to have the flight back, and how was everything when you came back? Did you notice sort of a difference straight away, or did it take a little bit more time?
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
I noticed a huge difference returning home. Bella's had so many long-term medical stays. I mean, this stay was 4 months in Toronto. She stayed longer for other reasons. It wasn't new to us to be gone for a while in hospital and come home. But what was different this time is the relief. Every other time we would come home, it was so overwhelming. I would be trained for a new way to use her line, her IVs, ostomy changes, new medications, daily IVs that would run 20 hours. Sometimes they would run 10. The record keeping I had to, record her ins and outs, so meticulously because she was surviving on IVs. And that was all gone. I didn't have to deal with any of it. Instead, I was coming home to less medication for my daughter, no IV fluids, a world of freedom for her. So it was such a huge relief coming home this time. It was exciting and not overwhelming.
Yeah, and I
Yeah.
imagine that you mentioned it before, but the relief as well of not having to do so much. I know you
Yeah.
posted again a post on Instagram where you went through the amount of medication that was used sort of pre-bowel or pre-new bowel, and the medication post-new bowel. It was just night and day.
I would have, 20, 15 to 20 syringes lined up. A lot of them had to be liquids because she couldn't either swallow a pill or it just had to be G-tube. She had injections, she had IVs, and it's down to like 5 pills, tiny pills that she can swallow in the morning. She has, and that'll come down to one in the coming months. And one of her injections right now, her blood thinner is going to be done in February, and that'll change to pill form. And I donated all of my like brand new package. Like I had so much IV supplies, IV pole, her IV pole, her IV pumps. It was so exciting to give those away or give them back. I donated a lot of my supplies to our local vet office, veterinarian office that they could use. It's just huge relief unpacking and getting rid of so much.
That's fantastic. No, that's really,
Yeah.
really good. Going back slightly to when you got the call, could you, and I suppose this goes for both, but when you got the call and when you came back, was there a sense of, because you'd obviously had to live so long, sort of the same way, could you sort of believe it had happened, or was there a sort of sense of, is this a dream type thing?
Very much so. Is this a dream? I remember them. They always tell us like the bowels are so so rare and so difficult to deal with that it's just mind-boggling to me that like hearts and lungs and kidneys and livers are so easily transplanted all the time, but bowels are not. It is very, very rare and very, very difficult and a very long wait. It was like I was floating in a dream for a solid 24 hours until she came like out of surgery. Partly anticipating this failing again, not working out again, because they always warn you, they try and prep you. Like the first call, they say, you can prep a kid for the recipient for the transplant, give them, they have meds and IVs right up until they're in the OR, because there's timing around the company, the surgeons that take the donor bowels out are different than Bella's surgeons that put the bowels in her. And there's a whole list of things that have to come together for that to actually happen. So when your child is ready to go into the OR to receive their new organ, and the other team is just taking them out and making sure they're viable, there is a moment in there where they would say, actually, no, we can't use them. So there was still points right up until the first hour when they're just getting her under anesthesia. That I was still just on that edge of like, is this actually happening? Is this going to happen? So I think I really I was in this cloud dreamland. Everything was going so smooth that my confidence that this was working out got higher. It built and got higher as the time went on. And then it really hit its peak when the surgeon called me and was like, I'm just going for a quick coffee. Things are great. And then that's when I was just like, this is the best dream of my life. It's reality. Things are good. And then it was just like, okay, when I see her, when she comes out of the OR and I see her, then it's like reality hit me. Then I was like, okay, we're in this. This is our new reality.
Yeah. Yeah. And then start to really believe from there.
Yeah. And then it kind of switched to more of like, okay, the main part is over, but there's still risk of rejection. They told me, okay, that's a solid 2 to 3 weeks before immediate harsh rejection is kind of, you're out of the woods with that. Like there's always risk of rejection, but the worst part is in those first 2 to 3 weeks. So then I was kind of just bracing for 2 to 3 weeks of like, okay, we have new bowels. This is amazing. This is what she needed to save her life. Now let's make sure rejection doesn't wreck anything. And yeah, Thankfully it did not.
That's excellent. That's fantastic news. So yeah, then you had that sort of 2 or 3 weeks again of having that sort of high anxiety and waiting and what have you. And then is it relief again? Is it that sort of same relief all over again of, okay, right, I can breathe a bit more now those feelings.
Yeah. Like then it was, and through that, things that helped, like she, after 6 days, she was able to walk again. She got stronger and stronger. She was able to, be off more medications that kept her like very sleepy. Like for the first week, she was very like just sleeping, like her body just needed the rest. And, her strength built, and the further we got from those first 3 weeks, she was up and like, I remember the first day we got up and she walked outside she went in a wheelchair and we just got outside. Like, we've never taken those moments for granted. We've been there before where it's like, okay, my child's been inside a hospital room for 3 weeks and we're now breathing fresh air again outside this building. Like that is important for us. Like those milestones, we do not take those for granted and we cherish them. So the day we got to just sit outside in the wheelchair was like, it lifted her spirits and she was happy. You know, and that went on to working with physio to gain enough strength to walk, not just down the hall, but to the elevator, then to the front doors of the hospital, and then outside to feed the pigeons. That was her goal.
I think you're absolutely right. I think people take those moments for granted. And yeah, and it's only when they're sort of taken from you, and then you think, oh, actually, this is really, really important. And walking, and it's like I said, feeding pigeons, feeding ducks is something we just take for granted. And I think that's really important to appreciate those moments, being outside, having fresh air, all of that stuff is so, so important. And I just, on sort of being grateful for things as well, I want to touch on the charity work that you do with you and Bella. I was having a look through, and you're involved in so many charitable organizations, should I say. I want to talk, there's loads of what to go through, like Make-A-Wish and the David Foster Foundation. But I want to start with the David Foster Foundation, because am I right in saying that organ donor foundation based in Canada?
Yeah. So a lot of people know David Foster as the world renowned music mogul. He's Canadian, and he has quite a story. If you look at, he explains it all on their website. I think it's a family related story to a kiddo he saw in hospital, and understanding from that experience what organ donation for pediatrics does for families, and understanding the amount of kids in Canada that need to travel to get these surgeries done. He knows that Toronto SickKids is the only place in Canada that can do a lot of these organ transplants. And so his foundation is set up to support families with accommodations, meals, and travel from where they live to where they need to get treatment for their transplants.
Fantastic. Yeah. And they had a gala that you and Bella attended that you seemed to have a lot of fun at.
Yes, it was amazing. They invited us to that gala, and we got to be there as not just as we were in waiting that time. So not just as like a transplant family in waiting, but Bella got to see what world renowned support, like these big people, what they can do for kiddos in hospital. She got to see firsthand what raising funds for kids like her in hospital can do for families. They shared our story, and they shared another story of a kiddo who had a heart transplant that was a younger little girl close to Bella's age. She got to meet her, play with her, understand her story, as well as be entertained by this massive gala. It was a musical, like it was Broadway was the theme. And that's right up her alley. Like fashion, dancing, singing. She had the best time. Meanwhile, she, like, you know, you mentioned this earlier, as a person with Hirschsprung's, her pain tolerance is through the roof. So she's at this point still in daily pain. But 2 hours before the gala, she was sick, vomited about 3 times. Her bowels were giving her heck. Pseudo obstruction was causing problems. And she rallied. I'm thinking, we're not going to make it. And she was like bound and determined. She's like, I am not missing my chance at a gala. Are you kidding me? And so she's like, whatever it takes, mom, I'm going. And I'm like, kid, I'm like, you got sick. It's okay, honey. Like, I know it wasn't like the flu or a stomach bug. We knew it was her bowel function, but she's like, I don't care what it takes, I'm going. And just to see what that gala did for her was enough, you know, let alone raising $11.2 million for the foundation. It was just an amazing experience.
Yeah, I was going to mention $11.2 million for families and in from the David Foster Foundation in organ donor, which was absolutely fantastic. But yeah, it's like you said, with the pain tolerance level, and if and the determination it brings, or the determination it seems to bring, that if you really, really want to do something, then you'll find a way. And that's, again, what I want this podcast to be, that yes, you know, Hirschsprung's and various other illnesses and diseases, yes, they don't help, but they don't stop you from achieving necessarily what you want to achieve. And, you know, if you want to go into sport or music or fashion or whatever it might be, just because you have Hirschsprung's, it doesn't mean that you can't achieve that. And Bella's very much living proof that she's incredibly determined from what I've seen and from what you've told me. And she just doesn't let it stand in her way.
No, that's right. That's right.
So with other charities that you've worked with or ambassadors for, Make-A-Wish was another that I came across that you are ambassadors for.
So Make-A-Wish is, of course, in lots of countries. I think it's worldwide. And then it has its by province as well. So in our province, so Saskatchewan, so Bella's a Saskatchewan Make-A-Wish ambassador. And then for like Make-A-Wish as a whole, so she became an ambassador because her story was so well known. And we wanted, of course, to support the foundation, especially at the time. Like, she was listed originally for a wish when we went through her bone marrow transplant, but we wanted to wait until she was old enough to decide what she wanted her wish to be. So around that time, Make-A-Wish contacted us, and she wrote out what she wanted her wishes to be, and she was about five or six, and then at six is when she got listed for a bowel transplant. So it had been, you know, 6 years of us understanding what Make-A-Wish does for kiddos, and they knew our story well, and they were happy to invite Bella to be an ambassador for the program. And so we're happy to share, but you know, any sort of companies that have helped us. Our journey has been so long, and Bella's been so vocal in it herself. And we've grown such a large social media following that it's a way, I tell Bella, it's a way for us to heal as well when we help others heal. So if we can help others through being ambassador for Sick Kids Hospital, Make-A-Wish, Ronald McDonald House charities, when we can use our energy and our experience for good, then this helps other kiddos just like her. And so anytime we would do philanthropy work or ambassadorship programs or any sort of sharing online for these organizations, I would tell Bella, when you do this, when you share a video about the Ronald McDonald House or create TikToks about Make-A-Wish, this is helping other kids like you. And that's a good thing to do. Of course, we'll do videos and things like that just for fun. But I always like to make sure she understands, like, what's the purpose of this? Why are we putting this online? Why are we sharing this? We are helping this group of people that is similar to our story, too.
That's absolutely fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. That's helping people is it's a lot of people talk about saying they want to do this, that, the other, but to go out and do it is absolutely fantastic. And more on the social media presence. I know you talked right at the very beginning when we were talking about being in hospital and about a way of staying in touch with the outside world. When did you and Bella start to realize that that your TikToks and YouTube were getting to reach so many people?
Yeah, so TikTok was really, it's so fast paced. So when her first video went viral, I was just learning how to use the app. I had no, at that point, I was doing a lot of advocacy work on my Instagram page and my Facebook page. Those were my primary ones. And we had about, I think, 900 followers at that time. And I was like, oh, this is good. This is a lot of people I'm reaching. Like, I knew our story was very rare and very unique. And I'm a teacher. I want to be educational. I want to help other parents. And Bella loved helping me with that. So, Instagram and Facebook, it was like, I was just trucking along thinking things are great, thinking I'm helping lots of people. And it was, but I had no idea around, I had no idea the reach that I could have. So TikTok definitely elevated that for us. And at this point I was sharing our story to help other moms and dads like me. And just share our story in hopes to help other families, really, and just, you know, have a way of connecting with people outside of the hospital. But when TikTok took off, I was just playing with the app. The video that took off was literally just the back, like the back of Bella's head. She was drawing. And I was just like, okay, I was sitting on the edge of my bed because it was COVID year. She's in grade two. She's working on a class assignment. And I'm just like, let me play around with this app. So I press record and she's drawing a picture and I put it to music. That was it. It goes viral. And I'm pretty sure it went viral because Bella having dwarfism, she looks a lot younger than she is. So here's this young child drawing this amazing picture and people are like, what? Like, minds are blown. I'm guessing that's why it went viral.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
So overnight we gain 1 million followers, 1 million views. And I'm already trying to reach people on my Instagram and my Facebook. And then overnight I get this platform that's reaching millions of people. And I really was just like, okay, I need to think smart about this. We have a unique story. If I'm going to be able to reach this amount, this level of people, I want to do it the right way. And that's where I'm like, okay, I have an ability now to say, hey, to all these other organizations that have helped us, I can now say, all right, I have this platform. How can I help you? And let's work together and let's collaborate and let's help each other out because I have this platform now and I want to use it for good. And Bella wants to use it for fun. So let's combine the two.
That works. That works.
Yeah.
So it can be used for. Really,
yeah. And then from there, I just, you know, just using the apps. I took some classes. I did some research. I went online and I'm like, how can I properly share our story as well as advocate? And I just learned how to make better posts and take better videos and edit properly.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
I think I'm still at that stage. I don't think I've reached that stage yet.
That was another thing I was going to mention is like, I'm still learning and I am like, ask my husband, like anything to do with a computer, he's my IT guy. And I'm always asking him for help. So he's like, how are you so adverse on social media, but like you can't like download a file? And I'm like, I don't know. But I think that's a reason why a lot of people are really drawn to our story, because it's not only unique, but I'm very real. Like I don't have time to set up a light and get somebody to video for me or I just grab my phone and I press record in the moment. If it feels right and if it's for a good purpose, I'll record. So we're very real and in the moment with what we do post.
I think that's kind of what, as you said, it draws a lot of people towards you, because they think actually you're not doing a video for views, for this, for that, for the other. It is very real. It is very raw. And it's not staged or set up or anything like that. And it is there to be informative, educational, and, well, as you said, as Bella said, fun as well, which is absolutely fantastic. And I want to talk as well, because there are various news videos about you and Bella and on CBC. And there's one particular Instagram story that I did see of yours. It's from fairly recent, I think, where Bella grabs the remote and she comes to you and she says, "I'm famous, I'm famous." And that really made me laugh.
So yes.
Just tell me how Bella, I know you touched on it a little bit, how she wants to make it fun and she wants to make it exciting, but how did she feel when she realizes that she's famous?
Yeah, she's so funny. She's like, we've done so many news interviews and radio and TV. So when she sees herself on TV, I'm like, "You're on TikTok." Like people pay more for TikTok views like than commercials on TV. I'm like, she thinks TV is like it. So she sees herself on this like 5-minute news bit and she's like, "What?" I'm like, I think it's so cute. Like, explain to her the difference between being famous like on TikTok and like being on like a newscast. She's like, "I don't care. I'm on TV, I'm famous." So it's kind of like adorable that way. And I'm like, "Yeah, no, that's great. You are famous because you're on TV." So she's pretty funny that way. Sometimes when we're out and about and she'll have people come up and be like, "Oh, I know who you are," and they'll want to say hi, and it's really sweet. Sometimes she's like, "Okay, Mom," like she'll count. She'll be like, "That's the 10th person today." And this is mostly when we're in Toronto, right? Like when we're back home in our tiny town. Well, it's not really tiny, I mean, but in our hometown, people just have always known us, so they're not stopping us on the street. But sometimes she'll count. Sometimes she'll say, "Do you want my autograph?" I'm like, "Bella!" But other times she's like, "I don't feel like talking right now." So she's like, she's both. I never know what I'm going to get when we go out in public. Am I going to get like famous Bella, or am I going to get "don't talk to me, Bella"? Like,
she's going to shun the limelight.
She's like, I always am like ready to like help the people out that come up to us, whether they're just like super excited that they just said hi, or she actually gets a picture. And then there's like some people where she's like, "No, I don't want to take a picture." And I'm like, "Sorry, she's not feeling it today." And they're just like, "Whatever." And they walk away. But I'm glad that she's like, you know, she's like, she's really into it some days. She's just like, "Here's my autograph." She'll sign like a napkin with like a crayon. And I'm like, "What?" I don't want her ego and her head to get big, but then the next day she'll be like, "Oh, I don't want to talk to you." I'm like, okay.
She just switches from day to day.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah. I'm like, well, that's good. She can manage this. She's got it. She makes her decisions and goes with it.
Manages fame far better than anybody else.
I think so. Yeah, like she doesn't care if you're offended. She's like, "I don't want to talk to you today. No, I don't want to take a picture. Sorry." And I'm like, I'm in the background like, "Sorry." But when really, it doesn't matter.
No, like, of course it doesn't. No. Oh, that's brilliant. That's absolutely hilarious. Oh, that
she
is awesome.
She should give Hollywood actors some tips to be like, just say no.
Absolutely. That could be a new TikTok venture, giving Hollywood actors some tips.
Like, could you imagine going up to like, say you go up to like Tom Cruise and you don't even say anything and he's just like, "Here's my autograph." that fella.
Like, yeah, just go, well, you want my autograph, not the other way around.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Oh, that is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. the final part I wanted to talk about was, I guess you've already sort of answered it in, yeah, the answer to this question might be being a celebrity, but what does the future hold for you and Bella?
Yeah, I mean, given, you know, life before transplant, I really wanted to give her as many experiences as possible as a kiddo that I was fearful that she would never get. It was really hard to tell her, like, we can't even leave Canada because we need to wait for the call, right? Like, organ donation is by area. So, like, there was a lot of, you know, reasons why we couldn't even leave the country, let alone medical reasons why we couldn't travel often because she just wasn't well. And also, I mean, how do you go anywhere with bags of TPN and IV lines and syringes and right? So now she has that whole world opened up to her. Just, you know, yesterday I sent in an application for her passport, and I'm excited that, like, you know, she's always wanted to go to Hawaii, she's wanted to go to Disneyland, and now we actually can say, yes, we can do that, let's go.
Fantastic.
You know, that, and just being like a celebrity, just having her presence be like a celebrity status, I was really happy that she got to experience a lot that, you know, quite often you just, the average kiddo wouldn't. Like, yes, we traveled to Toronto, but still, that's a big city.
Yeah.
And we got to see a lot of different people and go to basketball games and hockey games. And we still got to experience a lot of those really fantastic things. Even just like living in Saskatchewan, like we live in the middle of the prairies. We're on an acreage in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
So when we would travel to the city for her medical treatments, she's like, I love the city life. Yeah. I'm a city girl. She's like, I don't want to go back to the boring home in the middle of nowhere. So like, I'm like, you come to Toronto for surgeries and medical appointments and you want to live here now. Yes, because it's a big city. So like, I was just really excited that I still was able to get her some experiences that were exciting and enjoyable and different and new. Because I was fearful that she wouldn't get to live, you know, past the age of 10. So now, you know, having her transplant, that opens up a whole new world for her. And I mean, I hope we still get to see and do a lot more things that would be, you know, in her wildest dreams.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So you think the big cities for Bella.
Oh yeah. She wants to go to New York. She wants to go to Paris. She wants to travel. And I'm just happy that I can actually, like, we can actually take time to figure that out now.
No, that's absolutely fantastic. No, thank you ever so much. The last thing is just for me to say thank you ever so much for joining me on the very first episode. Well, this will be episode 3, but thank you ever so much.
Of course. I love podcasts. I like journaling and writing and creating posts, but there's just so much you can share when you're just having a talk, when you're just having a chat. So I'm really excited to share this as well. And there's a lot in here that I just haven't been able to say online. So
yeah,
kudos to your podcast. It's going to like blow up in a couple of weeks.
Fingers crossed.
That might sound really conceited, but I'm just I just mean, I'm really excited to share our chat because it's really good.
Yeah, no, I've absolutely loved having you on. Absolutely loved having you on. I wanted to start with an absolute bang, and I think I have. So thank you. Thank you ever so much. And if you ever want to come back again and talk some more, I'd absolutely love to have you on. If you want to have you and Bella on, that's great also. If she wants to come on once she's a big celebrity, then yeah, if she becomes a big celebrity and she's too big for my podcast, that's absolutely fine. but yeah,
I need
no.
to ask her. I need to ask her what level, like when she thinks she gets there. Like, is she there now, or does she think she still needs to get there? And what does that take? I want to ask her that. Like,
Is it?
do you need to meet Oprah? Do you need
Yeah.
to, like, who do you need to meet, or what do you need to do? I gotta ask her that.
Does
I
it
mean, she's
do
already,
it?
we've already joked about her being on a private jet already, because the like the air
Yeah.
ambulances are like
Well, yeah, it's a private jet, definitely.
the private
I
jet.
don't. Yeah, exactly. Well, you're halfway there with a private jet.
Kind of like a rock
Fantastic.
star, jet setter,
Yeah.
somewhat.
Absolutely. No, I'd absolutely love to have you on again. This has been the best fun. So thank you ever so much for your
Of
time.
course.
Thank
No
you.
problem.
Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprungs Podcast or Instagram on Tom's underscore Hirschsprungs underscore podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show and we'll bring you another episode soon.